I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to that conference. So my topic is robust factor analysis, and this is joint work with Christoph Crooks, Geert Pisson, and Peter Roussel. So factor analysis was originally introduced by psychologists, and it was also used for this purpose also in social sciences. But in the meantime, also there are applications in technical sciences, also in medicine, for example, for fMRI data analysis, they also use that method. I think most of you are familiar with factor analysis. What is the model? Suppose we have given some random variables x1 to xp. We call them also observable variables because they can be observed. And we want to model them by a factor model with factors f1 to fk, where k is less than p. Usually we call them latent variables or unobserved variables. And then the factor model is each variable is a linear combination of these factors plus an error term. For convenience of the notation, we can combine these error terms in a vector epsilon, and also these coefficients can be combined in the matrix lambda, which are called the factor loadings. And then we have some conditions or assumptions for the model, namely that the expectations of factors and error term is zero, that the covariance is the identity of the factors. The covariance matrix of the error term is a diagonal matrix, we call it psi, where the diagonal elements can be different from each other. So we call them also uniquenesses or unique variances. Each variable is allowed to have a unique variance. And finally, the error terms and factors are uncorrelated. So how can we estimate the unknown parameters, here lambda, factors, but also psi? Usually we estimate them by using the covariance matrix, sigma, which under these conditions can be written as the product of lambda, lambda transposed plus psi. So, and then this is easy to estimate. We just have to find the classical estimation of sigma, for example, the sample covariance matrix, and do a decomposition. So the easiest way is to use principal factor analysis, where you decompose, make a spectral decomposition of the reduced matrix sigma minus psi, or use a maximum likelihood method. Of course, since we used here the sample covariance matrix for estimating sigma, also the estimations of lambda and psi will be not robust at all. This was also confirmed by Tanaka and Odaka, who computed the influence function for principal factor analysis and the maximum likelihood method, and they found out that this influence function is unbounded. So, of course, a robustification of factor analysis is necessary and will hopefully also make sense. We have done that in a very simple way here by just robustly estimating this matrix sigma with the MCD estimator, for example. Then, at the basis of a robust estimation of sigma, we can use the classical methods, maximum likelihood, principal factor analysis, to estimate lambda and psi, also in a robust manner. We also have computed the influence function for principal factor analysis based on the MCD estimator, or in general based on a robust covariance matrix estimator, and it turned out that the influence function is now bounded. A very nice empirical tool is this empirical influence function, so it's a diagnostics tool for finding influential points here, influential observations. And I think Stefan van Elst will talk about that 1 hour later in session A. I just want to demonstrate that with an example how we can use this. This example considers data from a large geochemical mapping project. So there are data from the so-called Kola region, which is in the very north of Europe. So we have here the northern part of Europe, and here is a very small area. In fact, it's not so small. It's 188,000 square kilometers large. And this is the zoom of this area. So we have here the boundary of Norway, Finland here, and Russia at that side. And there are several mines, for example, here around nickel. There are nickel mines and also some smelters. Zapoljarny is also quite a large smelter. And around Monchegorsk, there are a lot of mines and smelters. This is the famous seaport Murmansk. And in this area, 600 samples of soil have been taken, irregularly distributed over the whole area, and analyzed for the concentration of chemical elements. So in total, they analyzed more than 50 chemical elements, the concentration of them. And additionally, they sampled 5 different layers in this area. So this is quite a huge data set, which is reported in this geochemical atlas here. So for each chemical element, they finally have the concentration and so the regional distribution over the complete area. So 50 chemical elements in 5 different layers, which means quite a lot of data and a very heavy book here. This was a larger project, and one question was, how deep have the atmospherically transported pollutants penetrated the soil cover? So they wanted to know, there's some industry, the mines, smelters, how large is the area which is affected by this pollution? And there are some typical elements reflecting pollution. For example, nickel, copper, cobalt, vanadium, iron, arsenic, and to some extent also silver. And we considered here the humus layer. Some numbers which demonstrate the pollution in that area. There are some major pollutants in Monchegorsk, nickel, Zapoljarny. And for example, if you consider copper, the emission of copper, in total 1,000 tons per year, which is quite a lot. Or nickel, twice. So our first question was, are there any outliers in the data set, just to get an idea of the quality of the data set? For that, we used the distance-distance plot. So just plotting the robust distance based on the MCT estimation against the Maldonovic distance. And yeah, we see that there are some outliers, but also some outliers which cannot be detected by the classical Maldonovic distance. Maybe it's more interesting to see the location of these outliers in the maps. So here, this map is for the Maldonovic distance, and this is for the robust distance. And the dark points are the outliers. So we can see that with a robust method, we can detect quite good this area where the industry is located. Whereas with a classical method, this is not really visible here. We also can see some interesting outliers here. And the outliers which are marked by star are, lower outliers. So the star values are outliers where each component, that the value in each component was below the median of that variable. So in other words, these are areas where there's less pollution. They are very clean areas, in fact. And there is almost no industry. There are not many cities. Now, we can use this empirical inference function once for the loadings and once for the psi matrix, for the uniquenesses. And we can see from these 600 data points the influence of each data point. So there are bounds and values which are below here or above these bounds are influential observations. Again, it would be nicer to see that in the map. And here is one map for the loadings and one map for the empirical influence function for the influential observations for the uniquenesses. The pluses are highly influential observations and the filled dots are lower values, but still influential observations. And again, we can see that these typical areas where the industry is located are highly influential points. And these points correspond more or less to each with the loadings and with the uniquenesses. So now we know there are outliers. We have to be careful with classical factor analysis. So we have done both classical and robust factor analysis using the MCT estimation. And the plots are the loadings here. So we extracted two factors and performed Virimax rotation in order to have a better explanation of the factors. We can see that with two factors, we can explain 78% for the classical method and 72% for the robust method. This vertical line, which separates the two factors, is the sum or the squared loadings for each factor, so it reflects the importance of each factor. And here we can see the loadings at each factor. Maybe we have a look at factor 1 of the robust method. There is nickel, copper, cobalt, which is which have high loadings on factor 1. So these are typical elements for pollution, and we could interpret the first factor as the factor with mainly gaseous pollution or emission. For the classical analysis, we have here additionally arsenic, which influences the first factor. And from the interpretation, this makes no sense because arsenic, together with cobalt, copper, and nickel, this has simply no meaning. The second factor is quite the same for the classical and robust method. And according to the combination of these variables, we could interpret this factor as the factor reflecting particulate emission. So now it will be interesting also to see the factor scores. And this is here on the left side for the classical method, on the right side for the robust method, above factor 1 and below factor 2. So factor 1 is for the gaseous emission. We can see in the robust analysis, first we have a common scale for these factors in order to compare the results, and the symbols is according to this box plot representation, which is quite common in geochemical mapping. So pluses reflect very high values, and we have here this area where the industry is located. There's quite a lot of gaseous pollution, and we can see that this area is obviously quite large, in any case larger than for the classical analysis. So in fact there's a larger area is penetrated than you would think with the classical method. Factor 2 was quite the same in both cases, but if you have a detailed look, you can see some interesting behavior here also, namely this band of large values here, which is quite interesting. And if you have the comparison with the map, this band corresponds exactly with the connection, with the traffic connection between Montfegorsk and the seaport Murmansk. So this is also factor 2 is for particulate emission, so we can understand that. Okay, so an overview of that method. We know MCT has a high breakdown point. Also, this method must have the same breakdown point. We can take the usual methods, principal factor analysis, maximum likelihood method, for estimating lambda and psi, and also for estimating the scores. We can handle large data sets, and we can use this empirical inference function as a tool for identifying inferential observations. But there are also some restrictions of that method, because for estimating the parameters, we first have to estimate the covariance matrix, which must not really be an advantage. And we can have problems with the so-called Haywood case, which means that you can have negative uniquenesses, negative variances. And additionally, there is the disadvantage that data sets where the number of variables is larger than the number of observations cannot be handled with this method. So, since there are some drawbacks, we tried to find another method, namely robust factor analysis based on the alternating regression approach. We call that the RARE approach. Therefore, we consider the sample version of the factor analysis model. Each data entry is a linear combination between factors and loadings, plus an error term. And we try to directly estimate now these parameters, factor scores and loadings, without using the covariance matrix. So, if we denote theta as the vector of unknown parameters, namely factor scores and factor loadings, then we want to have the estimated values according to the factor model, scores and loadings, written down here in vector notation, the ith factor score and the jth loadings vector. Now we want to choose this parameter vector such that the estimation is close to the real data values in order to obtain these estimated scores and loadings. So our objective function looks like that. The estimated value theta is the minimum over a function g of these residuals summarized over all columns and summarized over all rows. Of course, this function g depends on robustness properties of the estimator, but also on computational issues. So we have to find the minimum of this objective function, which could make some troubles. Therefore, we thought about splitting up this minimization problem into two separate problems. Namely, first, we can fix this index j, so the column index, in order to get rid of that sum, and we fix a scores vector, and then we could try to minimize this objective function in order to get these loadings vectors, lambda j, and we can do that for each j, for each column. On the other hand, we can fix the index I in order to get rid of that sum, and fix the loadings or take the loadings from the previous step, and then we try to select the factor scores in order to minimize this sum. And this is done for each row of the matrix. So we alternate between these two steps, and finally we can approximate the original objective function. And this procedure is called alternating regression procedure. It was introduced by Wald in 1966. After the estimation of loadings and scores, we can estimate the residual matrix, and each column of the residual matrix is then taken for the robust estimation of the variance, of the uniqueness. So we can simply take the median absolute deviation of each column of this residual matrix in order to get the uniquenesses. And of course, in that way, we never can have negative uniquenesses. So, what about this function g of the residuals? In the simplest way, we could take the least squares criterion here, so to consider the sum of the squared residuals. That way, we would have the best approximation in the least square sense, which corresponds to a singular value decomposition with rank k. Of course, LS regression is not robust. Therefore, we tried to use the L1 criterion, so minimize the sum over the absolute residuals. But still, L1 regression is sensitive with respect to X outliers or leverage points, and we should take something else in order to get a robust method. Now we propose to use weighted L1 regression, which is our rare estimator, where we downweight these leverage points. So additionally to this objective criterion from the L1 regression, we introduce weights for the rows and weights for the columns, where these weights are chosen according to this, to the minimum of 1, or take the chi-squared quantile divided by the robust distance of the factor scores. So we consider this matrix of factor scores, which is k-dimensional, and compute the robust distance for the ith row of this matrix. And this is easily done because the dimension k is usually quite low. And similarly, for this loading matrix. So this results in a very robust method. We have done a lot of simulations in order to see that, and the algorithm is quite fast. Of course, we also could have used other robust regression methods like regression with M estimation, which, however, is computationally quite expensive, and with that alternating algorithm, this makes no sense. Or we could have used LMS, LTS regression, which are both very robust, but we had here problems with convergence. Now, let us consider an example from an Austrian census from 91. We consider here districts from Styria. Most of you are familiar with Styria, so the capital is Graz, as you will know, and Vorau is in the district HB Hartberg. So as variables, we considered the percentage of children in these districts, the percentage of old and old people employed in industry, trade, tourism, service, agriculture, in mountain farms, unemployed, percentage of people with university education, of people with just primary school education, the percentage of employed people who cannot commute daily, but they stay the whole week, and percentage of employed who commute to other districts. So that's the data set. The first question is, how many factors should we choose? Therefore, we can plot the R-squared measure. So this plot corresponds more or less to the Scree plot. We compare the classical method and the robust method using the weighted L1 criterion, the rare estimation. For the classical method, we used this alternating regression procedure using LS regressions, which more or less corresponds to to the classical factor analysis method. We see that three factors explain, in the classical case, almost 84%, in the robust case, almost 78%, so this seems reasonable. At next, it will be interesting to inspect the residual matrix, which is visualized here. So we have here the 13 variables, and here the 17 districts, and in the z direction we have the residuals. So for the robust analysis, we can see that in the first district, which is Graz, there are several outliers. For example, the second variable here. It was the third variable. Percentage of employed in industry is extremely low for Graz. On the other hand, there is a high value of the percentage of people working in service, and so on. So in these residual plots, we can already find the outliers, which means that indeed this method is robust, since the outliers are in the residuals. This is the residual plot for the LS method. We have to note that the scale is also quite different. Here we have the scale from minus 6 to 8. Here the scale is from minus 1.5 to 1.5. So typically for LS methods, the residuals, the outliers, spread over the whole matrix. We cannot find any outliers here. With the help of biplots, we can now see the factor scores and loadings, where we just plotted factor 1 against factor 2. Again, for the classical method and for the robust method, the classical result here is mainly dominated by the outlier graphs, so this plot will not make any sense. In contrary, this plot, we know the residuals, the outliers are in the residual matrix, and the biplot, hence, will make sense. We can see that factor 1 and 2 more or less separate the industrial from the rural districts. Here we have two rural districts. This is at Hartberg, for example. There are large values for commuting not daily, for employed in agriculture, primary school, education, and so on. We also can see the uniquenesses, unique variances, which are shown here by parallel box plots for each variable. Again, the scale is quite different, minus 4 to 8, minus 1 to 1.5. So more or less, these uniquenesses for the classical method are the same. But here for the robust method, we have variable number 4, which has quite a large robust residual. This variable 4 is the employed in trade, so the factor model is not really explaining a lot of variation of variable number 4. So, to conclude here, this alternating regression method seems or is very robust. We also have done several simulation experiments where we compared the rare approach with the MCD approach, and it turned out that both are comparable. Of course, we cannot directly compare the methods because it depends on the location of the outliers. So our rare method would already break down if there are more than 50% of outliers in one row or one column of the data matrix, because this regression is done iteratively. On the other hand, if there are outlying cells for the rare approach, then the other information of this row or of this column is also used for estimation, whereas MCD, if there is just one outlying cell in one observation, the complete observation is not used for further estimation. So we have the further advantage that uniquenesses can never be negative. Of course, P larger than N is possible here, since rows and columns are treated equally. And, yeah, I have not shown this formula before. The choice of the number of factors is according to this R squared measure, which is a straightforward extension to the classical R squared measure. We also can extend this rare approach to the so-called Fanover model, which combines both factor analysis and ANOVA. So the model there is each data point resembles a general mean vector mu plus row effects ai plus column effects bj, and the interaction term is again modeled by this factor model. So we also can use this approach for estimating the parameters in this model. But of course, there are also some restrictions. We cannot use the method for very large data sets because we have a lot of iterations to do. And we have less theoretical results for that method, so no inference function, which seems to be quite complicated to compute here, and no breakdown point, just empirical results with a lot of simulations. So still some minutes. Yeah. So we have developed two approaches for robustifying factor analysis. The first one is based on a robust scatter matrix, which is suitable for very large data sets. And the second one is suitable for factor analysis with data where we have several outlying cells. And of course, we could also use that method for data sets where we have some missing data, missing cells with missing variables, missing values. We have a program for the rare approach in S+, which you can download from my webpage. And finally, I should mention that there's a lot of criticism to factor analysis because the results often very strongly depend on which variables do you use, which method for extraction of factors do you use, maximum likelihood or principal factor analysis or something else, how many factors would you extract, which rotation method is taken, or which method for the estimation of the factor scores is taken. So these problems are addressed in a paper together with Clemens Reimann and Bob Garrett. And we do not just criticism, we also have some concepts of how to do factor analysis at real data sets where the results should be more stable and make sense. Well, and finally, not in that context, I would mention one point, namely most of you have already subscribed to a internet discussion list on robust statistics. If you still have not subscribed, there is you just can send an email there with the subject subscribe robust list. I think this would really be interesting to have their discussions. Claudio Agostinelli, he was the initiator of that robust list, and I think that would also be important for convincing other people which are not in the robustness community to use robust methods to make them interesting of robustness. Okay, thanks.
This is concerning the MCD-based approach. You said because the MCD has a high breakdown point, this method must have also a high breakdown point. How is this defined?
This was my naive idea. If all the estimations are based on the MCD estimation, then also the estimation of lambda and psi must have the same behavior, and we can see that in the inference function. We have the robustness property, but for the breakdown point, I'm not quite sure if
There is probably a problem in defining the breakdown point because
right.
you kind of need a measure to measure the distance between the outcomes of the factor analysis and to state somehow when it has broken down. I think that's what we need.
Yes.
In a heuristic sense, of course, that would be inherited.
So we did not really investigate that.
More questions? Yes?
What about in the Baramax rotation? Does that need to be robustified, the rotation itself?
It could make sense, because you could have also outlying variables, and then this Baramax rotation would rotate to these outlying variables. So it could make some sense to robustify that. But I've not seen any work in that direction.
Mm-hmm. There is a bit of literature on robust singular value decompositions, which are very close to this RAR.
In fact, we have used this alternating regression approach also for a robust singular value decomposition, which is straightforward to that.
It's basically the
but,
same.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no. Right. Uh-huh.
Is the competence of the RAR based on empirical theories or theoretical competence or alternating?
The convergence. No, there is no theoretical proof. We have run thousands of simulations and we had never problems with convergence. But there's no. Yeah, just empirical. No theoretical framework, no.
Any other questions? Well, that's not the case. Then let's thank the speakers again.